It's high noon in West Marin, and you're listening to KWMR Point Reyes Station.
Well, good afternoon, West Marin. Indeed, it is high noon. Thanks to Richard Dillman, our transmitter wrangler, for bringing us that high noon message each and every day. And it's just about time for another episode of Let's Talk with your host, Stephen Hurwitz. But first, let me let you know that KWMR's programming is brought to you by the Pacific Sun, Marin's Arts and News Weekly, online at pacificsun.com. And support for KWMR is also provided by our listener members and by the West Marin Community Services, providing programs to support the community, including a food pantry, emergency financial assistance, Latino engagement programs, and other community programs, located in Point Reyes Station, two doors down from KWMR. Information at 415-663-8361 or online at westmarincommunityservices.org. And now, let's talk.
It's Thursday noon, and you're listening to Let's Talk, listener call-in radio. You can join the conversation by calling 663-8492, that's area code 415, and 663-8317. I'm your host, Stephen Hurwitz, and today we're going to talk with M.K. Chandler, who is going to talk to us about a creative life. M.K., you seem to fit that bill. You've lived a creative life from the start. You know, I feel like I'm peeking through a keyhole when I know what you're up to, because a lot of what I know came from your Facebook posts. And hi there.
Hi. Good to see you.
So, yeah, good to see you.
Thanks
too.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you've been on a lot. You are a longtime listener to the program, going way back, and a frequent contributor, so this should be just like old family.
Old times.
Old time. So what are you up to? You know, you fit in.
Well, let me tell you, Stephen. This morning I was trying to figure out where I should be in the house, which would be the most, you know, comfortable and appropriate place. But it turns out that we have been visited by a large rodent in our house. So everything is pulled out from the walls and thrown all over the place. And I'm in my bedroom, which is a good place for me to be, because this is where I make most of the stuff that I make. And so that's why I'm here. And here I am.
You know, that's interesting.
As far as creativity goes?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I have always been an artist. I can remember, I was thinking about it the other day. I can remember some things I made in kindergarten that I just loved. Lots of blue skies and stuff. Just remember that so vividly. And I was talking to a friend of mine about the creative process, because that, I think, was originally what you wanted us to talk about today. And I think, and she thought, after, because I just couldn't come up with anything, that the creative process is perhaps referred to who people who aren't creative. We don't get up in the morning and say, today I have a process to do blah, 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 blah. It's just sort of built in, and it's always been there. And it's evolved really in a very amusing way for me over the years.
Well, when you say amusing, that's interesting because when I look at your work, I see, I think playfulness is probably one of the things that sort of jumps out at it. Your stuff very playful.
It's sort of naivete, I thought too.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's naive and it's fun.
I think that's because I'm a folk artist, being self-taught pretty much completely. I've taken some courses in etching and engraving and sculpture and things like that, but basically I've looked at things and somehow been able to figure out where what my interpretation of them is and have gone from there. I've made a lot of soft sculptures. I work a lot in fabric and embroidery and also in watercolor and gouache, and I've never really done oil or acrylic, except there's a picture over my bed, if I get my head out of the way, that is a big acrylic painting from 1970-something. Uh-huh. And it's somehow, I've moved all over the place, and somehow there are some things that you don't lose, that some things that just stay with you. I was in the basement the other day, and what do you know? There's that painting. I thought, wow, that's interesting. So I brought it upstairs and put it up on the wall.
I think things get changed with age, too. When you look at it now, after having not seen it in a long time, does it look different to you?
Yeah, I can see some things I should have done differently. But that's too bad. I mean, that's just the way it is. And it's two figures, two women, and in the background there used to be another figure. And it would be better if it was, because threes and fives and odd numbers of whatever's in a picture is more interesting than the even numbers.
I find that I have works that I've painted and I've disowned. And I went, oh God, I'm just going to put that away. And then maybe a year or two later, I pull it out and I just see it in a whole new way. It seems like it has to age, or I have to age in order to be able to accept it. Do you
yes,
have that issue
very
with
true.
Not being able to accept your stuff?
And it's very, very interesting that happens to me anyway, because these pieces that we collect and keep with us for our lives that we've made are very much a part of us. I've sold a bunch of stuff. When I lived in Hawaii, I supported myself by making mermaids and mermen and things that were appropriate to the islands. And I did very well. So, you know, there's a bit of yourself in each piece, or a lot of yourself in each piece. And sometimes in the beginning, I kind of felt like I was selling my children, you know, but then you sort of get over that. And just don't get to the point where if somebody says, could you make that in green?
Yeah.
No, it's not though with my sofa. Then you just don't just say that that's enough of that. But refuse to create for a market.
I have sometimes I do stuff that I just I don't want to unhand it. On the one hand, I feel like, well, I would much rather that it was on somebody else's wall and they were enjoying it than just sitting in on mine. But on the other hand, I look at stuff and I'm just not ready to give it up.
This absolutely, I understand completely what you're saying. I have Parkinson's disease, as you know, and so I've been. I'm sort of thinking in the beginning, oh no, I'm not going to be able to use my hands anymore, boo hoo hoo. And then I realized that my left hand was the only one that wasn't really affected. And so my right hand is pretty good. And I thought, okay, well, just stop being such a big baby. You've got all this material and thread and needles and all this stuff. Do something with it. And then the pandemic happened. And I was very, very happy that I had that, you know, that I have all the pieces of material that I needed to get to work on stuff. And I've made some really amusing things. As you know, if you've been spying on me.
I have.
Stephen. I've made forever these, I don't know if you can see this, but these people and creatures.
We're on the radio. Yeah, but I can describe that if you like. Pull it up again and I'll describe it to the listeners.
Okay.
A little to your left. Oh, okay. What we've got here are some creatures, and true to MK's stuff there, she's also paid a lot of attention to their outfits. You like these, they look like bird creatures, and you mixed the bird creatures with the two women, and you know, they're kind of, it's a fantasy life, really.
I think it's a woman and a man, actually.
Oh, one's the in the blue, that's a man? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the story? What are you thinking when you do these pictures?
You know, that there really isn't a story, and there should be, because I've got a lot of those. And I always think afterwards, okay, when I get ready to have a show, and when I get ready, I'm going to write down little bios for each one of these pictures, and I haven't really done it. I just was making them because it, at that point, felt really good to make something. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, it's a basic thing. It's really hard to define. There's no great romantic thing that goes along with, at least for me, that goes along with making new and different things, because they're just sort of variations on a theme, most of it. But then I thought, what would happen if I made three-dimensional things that look like those creatures? So I thought to myself, I'll make a cat. So all of my animals that I make always end up looking like people, because I really like people. And so here is the cat.
This is a cat. It's purple. It's got yellow eyes. It's actually a very wild creature. With how would you describe this? Wow.
It sort of took on a life of its own. It's actually blue linen, the basics of it. And I made the head, and I like making the faces of all of these things better than any of the other parts. But then I just started adding to it and adding to it and adding to it until one day it told me it was done, and that was that. Okay, so there's the cat. I'm sorry if everybody's not on Zoom, because...
Yeah, no, we're on radio, so it's a little difficult.
Yeah, but a little hard.
What I see, though,
maybe
also...
Maybe this is going to work, then.
No, what I see maybe also is this business of accumulation in your work.
Yeah, but I've made six pieces. Yeah, and they're based on a little saying by Albert Einstein, who was a reasonably intelligent person. Creativity is intelligence having fun. And I totally agree with that. I think that sums it right up.
Me too. Me too.
I don't take this all so seriously. You know, I it's just part of who I am to keep on cranking out the stuff.
Yeah.
And so I do.
You know, I think that's the way I approach my work too, is that I would call it more serious fun. I want to get in there, and when I get in my studio, I generally start off by doing a little dancing, a little movement. It just sort of gets me into a funner place. And but I want to enjoy it. That doesn't mean that that everything just falls into place and it's my little happy place. But ultimately, I want a sense of satisfaction, and I want fulfillment.
And, do you find that if you don't work for any length of time, it sort of gets all bottled up inside of you, and you're much better off if you can let it out? Because I certainly operate that way.
I think that I feel a lot better if I do it on a regular basis. You know, a friend of mine, Donna Sheehan, once told me that we need to get in our studio every day for a year to really get in the groove. And I can't do that, but I know what she meant. There's just this continuity that's important with what you do, and you can lose that continuity. But I need to take breaks too. I sort of get I work in little spurts, really. I'll do a whole bunch of stuff all because it all blends into each other, and then I'll be kind of sort of exhausted of that particular mm-hmm. approach.
Yeah.
I think you're like me in a way.
I find too that it's especially during, well, not, it's not it, during the pandemic, it was very important, but for my whole life, it's been a kind of a meditation. It's been a kind of a place to go where I'm deeply, deeply into whatever I'm doing. And it's partly because you have to be able to see the little teeny weeny hole in the bead in order to put the needle through it and sew it on, but also because it takes everything else away. And when I get done, or would get to a point where now I can only work for a few hours at a time because like my hands hurt, but I could work 8-9 hours sewing and beading and stuffing and dancing around the room because they're so funny, so many of them that I found it very renewing and very important.
I can understand that. I feel the same way in many cases. The time I'll go in to my studio and I don't know where the time goes. I think that happens with a lot of with creativity, people who are working there, they get lost in what they're doing. And, you know, we're talking about the visual arts, but really in a sense, what I call the creative life, it's more of an attitude than it is a specific act. It's bringing a certain a way of doing things to everything you do. It could be cooking, gardening. You have a garden. I think you've shown some pictures of your garden.
Oh, yes. I wish that I could be out there right now because it's beautiful, but there's no Wi-Fi. So.
Okay.
It can't be. It's terrific.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time out there. I love planting seeds and watching things grow, and I love transplanting, and I love figuring out why crops fail. And, you know, it's just really fun. My daughter, Allie, is a wonderful gardener herself, and we've created quite a space back there.
So that's, you bring the same point of view and attitude to your garden as you do to your painting and embroidery.
Yeah, except that now a lot of the times I'll plant a row of something, and then when it comes up, I can't remember what I planted. So you just have to wait until it gets big enough to be recognized and almost edible before I'll know what it is.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Well, it is fun. It's sort of silly, but it's I think silliness is very important.
You know, you said you've done it your whole life. You mean as long as you can remember, you've been making things and painting and stuff like mm-hmm. that?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. And my mother, who was a very wonderful linear thinking kind of person, used to get very unhappy with me when I thumbtack my work so that I could, you know, do my own critique of my work even before I knew what a critique was, by sticking thumbtacks into her beautiful painted walls and dumping India ink onto her beautiful linens and so on and so forth. My gift was not celebrated so much by the family.
You know, that's interesting because I was going to ask you about that. There's this whole business of nature or nurture, and the nurture side is a family that understands and approves and supports what you're doing. And I'm just wondering if this is something that gets translated from one generation to the next. You probably have.
Yeah, I think it is. My family is very conservative in their way. I mean, they're intelligent and very well educated formally, which I think kind of leaves holes in people's lives sometimes. But I'm not educated very much formally, but I know a lot of stuff, and I know what I like, and I'm really good at learning about things that I enjoy learning about. And, you know, I'm never going to be a scientist or a mathematician or whatever else, but I'm going to be a lot of other things and have been. I guess I'm grateful for their disapproval. My creativity was looked upon as a symptom almost. My dad was a doctor. So it was like, oh dear, she's coming down with something. She's making those drawings again. It was like, I don't, I didn't really fit, except I look a lot like him. So I know that we're related, but it's kind of like the mistaken zygote, you know, that story of the stork that's carrying the baby in the diaper over the hilltops in Holland, and he hits a wind shear and drops the baby down the wrong chimney. And that's kind of how I felt. But now I'm very grateful that I am who I am. And they, you know, they have their own things and I have mine.
Well, you know, there is that that business of artists feeling as outsiders. And we have a caller, by the way. So why don't we hear what Ron has to say? Hi, Ron. Are you on the air?
I think so. Yeah. Howdy.
Hi. Who are you? And tell us where you live. And as my friend Paul Raffaello always used to say, keep it clean.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm Ron. I live in Seattle, and I know some people who are artists, and I was curious about what's the biggest driver of creativity. Is it for self-satisfaction, or is it for affirmation, you know, from others? You know, what's the thing that really inspires an artist the most, that really makes them bring out the best that they have?
You want to do it, or do you want me to do it?
Go ahead, MK.
Okay. I have found that when I am the most unhappy, the most discouraged, and the most in despair about things, that when I work and I create things, they tend to be very gentle and very fine, and they make me feel better. And if other people like them, great, that's fine. But that's not the bottom line. I'm not really a salesperson.
You know, speaking for myself, I think that's really complex, Ron, because I personally feel very vulnerable, and I think that in a way that goes to your question. I don't really my studio is a place where I don't really like guests. I don't want people to see stuff before I'm finished, because I don't want to hear whether they like it or don't like it. I want to keep that element out of it. And and of course, I'll admit that there is ego involved when it's all done. I do want to get, I do want approval. And, you know, I was talking to Mary Eubank last show, and she told me privately, she says, oh, ego, I got over that a long time ago. And I'm not sure I have.
I hope I never do. It's important.
Does that answer your question, Ron?
Yeah, no, it really does, because I mean, I'm not an artist by any stretch, but I do have creative streaks of, you know, various types, and I found that I really don't want people to see or know what I'm doing until I'm done, and then I'm happy with what I've done, but then afterwards I want somebody to kind of confirm, oh yeah, that's great, you know, or oh man, I don't understand that. So I see great works of art, and I wonder what pushed them to get to that level. Was it the self-satisfaction, or was it the, you know, the accolades after? And it's a complex thing, and it's probably different for different people. But it sounds like from both of you guys that, you know, you first want to satisfy your own aspirations, and you know, the affirmation is kind of icing on the cake, if you get it.
If you go back far enough, you'll find out that some of the very famous early artists were trying to please the Pope. You know, things have changed a lot.
Hey, we've got another caller on the line. Ron, thank you for calling in.
And yeah, let's
see if we can hear from our other caller. Hi, caller, are you on the air?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Shelly. How are you?
Hi, Shelly.
Hey, Shelly.
Hey, MK. Good to hear you.
How are you? Good to hear you.
I'm in Gallery Route 1 right now, walking around amongst the members exhibition. And there's a lot of inspiration to be found right here, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I wish I could see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can always go online, the Gallery Route 1 website, galleryroute1.org. There's a
I did see it at the opening.
Oh, yeah.
I did. Well, there's... I watched the opening presentation.
Simple walk.
There's some wonderful artists down there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Shelley, you mentioned a word that just sort of caught my attention, and that is inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And I get inspiration too from a lot of different things. I like to look at Pinterest, for example, because it's not only it's just an art education for me. You can just follow these tracks of different artists. But sometimes I'll look at stuff that artists are doing. It just makes me want to get going,
right?
And it just really gets me moving.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to share a little creativity story about, you know, one project that I got involved with and the spark that triggered the whole exploration. And in this case, I was having tea with a friend, and she was knitting a pair of socks. And she set her knitting down on the table, and I looked at it, and I started to imagine, what if that tube attached to those knitting needles was large enough for people to get inside of it? And that was it.
Like a giant sock?
A giant, well, we didn't make a giant sock, but we did make several giant tubes, as it turned out. And, you know, my whole giant knitting thing that I did.
Mm-hmm.
That
plastic bags,
the whole exploration. We in order to make a giant tube that people could go inside of, we had to make giant knitting needles.
So. That's right, and I remember your knitting. What was it? The tape that
caution
they used.
Tape.
What's it called?
Caution tape.
Caution tape. That's right.
Yeah.
To me, that sounds like death shrouds, though. The first thing I thought of is this bag that people would be put in when they die. But I'm sure that isn't what you meant.
Well, yeah, it was more, you know, kind of a combination of ideas. And recently, I've used the giant knitting to draw attention to the overuse of plastics in our culture and the problem.
Yeah, if you knitted a shroud out of plastic bags, it would be as good as a coffin. I mean, it would be probably even better. It would take it years and years and years.
Yeah. You'd be there 1,000 years in that thing.
Well, I'm enjoying chatting with you all, but I think it's time for me to say goodbye.
Okay, thanks for calling, Shelley.
You're welcome, and keep it up.
Okay, all thanks. Right.
So I don't know if we're going to get an announcement at the bottom of the hour or not.
I think we are.
Yeah, Jeff mentioned that. Should we? Jeff, if you're hearing me, just butt in whenever it is that you're ready to.
Well, it seems like an appropriate place to just take a quick moment to let our listeners know that this is KWMR 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, 92.3 in the San Geronimo Valley. And I'd like to let you know that KWMR holds board meetings on the third Wednesday of the month, except in August and December, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. And KWMR will hold internet-based board meetings until it's safe to meet in person. All meetings are open to the public, and if you'd like to receive meeting sign-in credentials, please contact station manager Amanda Eichstedt at amanda@kwmr.org or by phone at 415-663-8068, extension 104. And that's all I've got, so we'll pass things over to Let's Talk.
Hey, thank you, and you know I don't want to forget to tell you that you can join the conversation by calling 415-663-8492 or 415-663-8317. I keep forgetting to say that enough times. Again, that's 663-8492. We'd love to hear from you and get your point of view on this subject.
Okay, Stephen, ask me a really tough question.
Oh, a tough question. I want to go back to your youth, and because there's this whole business of teenagers being misunderstood and the creative teenager feeling sort of out of it, because that's a real strong time for conformity. And you sort of mentioned that a little bit. Was that the case for you?
Well, I know what you're talking about, that an awful lot of kids, because of that feeling of conformity, lose their interest or are frightened off by criticism. I don't think that art should ever be graded. I think that that's a big mistake in schools. Well, there are a lot of mistakes in schools, but that's one that's always bugged me, that, you know, that there should be if you can't say anything nice about it, you could say, well, that's an idea, you know? You don't have to say it's a good or a horrible or whatever idea. It's just, you know, that's an idea. And that, you know, that makes the kid feel less vulnerable, I guess, when you're that. They should, you know, I always produced. I always took as many art classes as I could, wherever I was. And it's a very comfortable place for me. I like it a lot. I'm lucky.
Yeah. For me, I didn't really get active making art until I was out of college. And when I was in college, I started working in clay, and that sort of changed everything for me.
Did you do it because you needed a credit, for an art credit?
No, I did it on my own. I just somehow wanted to get involved, and clay just attracted me. The whole business of throwing on a wheel and the centering of it all. And it made a huge difference in my life, and just in terms of how I looked at things.
I've never done that. I wonder what I would make.
I don't know either, but if you're on the wheel, it all has to do with something centered.
I admire a lot of pots and things that people make. Glass makes me a little nervous, but I the process of blowing glass is wonderful too.
Well, I like working in sculpture right now. I'm also a photographer, but I'm really having fun using my hands being able to. I'm using wood and painting on wood, and I'm just really enjoying that. But you know, as a kid, my mother was very creative, and she used to take me to the museums. We'd visit New York now and then, and I always went to the Museum of Modern Art. It just was never a fail, and I think I got that in terms of all this business of creativity being part of your life, and more being an approach to your life rather than this intentional, I'm going to make art, I'm going to be creative, which...
That doesn't really happen.
Yeah, well...
At least it doesn't happen to me.
Yeah, I think for me as an artist, I think... The business of creativity is interesting to me more on an intellectual level, which is why I think I'm exploring this subject on Let's Talk. And I think when somebody calls themselves an artist, I think they are in many ways making a conscious commitment to creativity. You may disagree.
I think of myself more as an artisan than an artist. Mm-hmm. As an artisan makes beautiful things. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be one, you know, one thing or another. It's hard to explain, because it really is just part of my life. That I should have seen the birthday cakes I made my kids when they were little. They were scary. They had green frosting and all kinds of yucky stuff. It was very creative, I'll tell you that. And they tasted fine, but they looked a little peculiar.
I think that's sort of what I mean in terms of that attitude in everything you do.
You can never quite leave anything alone. You know, you have to tweak it somehow. You have to maybe making it my own. I don't know. I don't really think that, but maybe that's what it is. You know, I've added my little bit to this, whatever it is, and it's better now because I did it. It's just pretty egocentric, but hey, I'm old enough to be egocentric. It works out fine.
So you weren't, you didn't have purple hair when you were in high school?
Oh yeah, I didn't have purple hair on purpose. I had red hair because the henna wouldn't rinse out. And I looked like little St. Mary Catherine from Ireland, and I'm neither Catholic nor Irish. But anyway, and I dyed my hair for my 18th birthday party. It came out Army Green, which was really a mistake. But we didn't have that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I gave my father a good laugh, I'll tell you that. We didn't have that. We had light and bright and peroxide and things like that, but I was always sort of blonde anyway, so I didn't do that. You know, I don't think I wore black turtleneck shirts because I know I look good in black. You know,
you said a word that sort of jumped out at me there, and because I think it's integral to some of the best stuff that that people do, and that's mistakes. You know, I think that. I like making mistakes because I think that
that's how we learn.
Me in another direction, they allow me to do stuff. You know, it's like, oh, I've already messed this up anyway. Let me really.
It allows you to evolve, and yeah. I think you know you just sometimes need to trip a little bit or get shoved a little bit or get off of your own path a little bit. I think that's what you were saying. That you know, and then you'll straighten yourself up and say, "Oh, this is a possibility." And then do it and try it and see what happens. And if you fail, then try another thing.
I've gotten used to my mistakes. I think there's a mistake in everything I do. And then when I'm done, I look at it and say, oh, there's the mistake. You know,
I've never done that.
Oh, really? I mess up every time.
Now this cat's ribs are seriously cockeyed. I wish people could see it. I mean, his sternum is somewhere else. Not
that's
right.
Probably part of your the beauty of what you do, though, that naivete. Well, it's not naivete, it's naive. It's a little, that's not, I didn't use the right.
That's the same thing, isn't it? There's a childishness. There's a childlike quality. I like that better than naive.
Yeah.
Because children aren't really full of wonder. People always say, oh, they're so full of wonder. They're not. They're so busy learning that they're like little sponges. You know, and they you have to have a frame of reference in order to be in a state of wonder. And you have so it's that's just because I'm an old Montessori teacher, but
well, okay, that's something for sure. So your kids were in your Montessori class. Did you really encourage them to get dirty? And
yeah, for a while, and then the car got too small on the freeway, and they went to the public school, and they did fine. But I'm really happy that they got that beginning in Montessori, because basically what it says is the more you know about your environment, the better able you are to cope. Mm. And it's, you know, if a glass breaks, you sweep it up. If a drink spills, you mop it up. If you get covered with leeches, as my son did when he went into this freshwater pond, you find out everything you can about leeches. You know, why does a bee sting you? Why is the wind blowing? There's so many things and the more awareness you have of your surroundings and your environment, that yeah, you really are in a much better position and much less frightened, I think. And I think fear is something that we all experience, but it's also a real stopper. It's a stoplight. So.
You know, I find confronting fear in the stuff that I do, and it's this business of fear of messing up, and I know it's there, and I know it's wrong, and I know it impedes.
Why is it wrong?
Well, to have that fear of messing up, because I think it impedes my freedom. I feel that all of a sudden I feel. Stopped in a certain way. I like what's going on, and I don't want to miss. I'm getting over that, though, by the way. I saw a documentary about a painter. I don't remember his name, but he did this just amazing painting, and I watched his whole process, and he just worked through it, and he did this painting. It was just, I thought, beautiful. And then he started, kept going, and he started painting over all that beautiful painting that he did. And it just evolved into a completely different painting. And I thought, oh my God, this guy, he doesn't care. He just goes straight for it. And sometimes I wish I was like that. I'm not, but that's something
maybe you'll
learn about
evolve
yourself.
Evolve into your own version of whatever it is you want it to be. Just exactly. Open the door a little bit and don't worry so much. Well, one time I was working at a school and they were putting on a play. And so they thought they'd like to have some big scenery. And we discovered if you mixed tempera, powdered tempera paint with vano starch, which is a kind of laundry starch that used to be out in the market. It's blue, I think, or pink or something. If you mix those two together and painted the scenery on cotton sheets, the old fashioned kind, the starch stuff gave the tempera a flexibility so it didn't crack the way it would do other way. And those, I think they used those. We did some sort of thing. I did like a Russo jungle thing, you know, with all sorts of colors and my kind of shaped flowers of the kind that I seem to make. And it worked beautifully and they were gorgeous, but I didn't know how to do it. And I just thought to myself, okay, let's do it. And so I did it. That's kind of how I work. I don't get scared. I've never been afraid of what you were describing. That's interesting.
That's interesting in itself that because your stuff is very, it's very personal in size as well. It's not huge, but if you're doing a big backdrop, that was probably pretty big.
Yeah. Yeah, they were twin sized old cotton sheets. You know, the old heavy kind that if you live in a climate like New England, where I grew up, we remember the damp sheets because of the humidity and the muggy nights and, you know, things like that. They're heavier than the ones I have now that cost $1 million. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, but I've never been afraid of my work or trying something new or.
No, I don't mind.
I haven't failed that much as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't know. It's an interesting. And I don't really want to look at it too closely, which is maybe why I've never really looked closely at it, because I think that if you think too much about something, it can really slow you down. I think you're overeducated, Stephen, frankly.
I am. You're right, and I think that I have an art education. I went for that. I'm very interested in other artists.
You mean like art appreciation, the history of art and all that?
Well, that and just specific artists. I'm pretty much into artists from the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Interesting.
And that's really those artists. And they're coming back, by the way. I've noticed there's a reemergence of interest in artists from that period of time.
Like for instance?
Well, Calder is one of my...
Me too.
My favorites. They just did a big Calder show. People like Brancusi, and he's a fan of mine. He's a minimalist sculptor. I think he's brilliant. And Noguchi is another one. It's funny because I like these very naturalistic artists, and my stuff isn't really like that at all. But they really attract me, especially Noguchi.
Your stuff doesn't have very many curves.
It doesn't. You're right.
Yeah, my work is all curves.
Yeah, I know. My stuff is very orderly too, isn't it?
Interesting.
But you know, right now, I've been doing these striped paintings on plywood, and I have all these little chips that I use when I'm working out my colors for it. And now I'm taking all my color chips and I'm doing assemblages with the color chips.
Good for you.
Yeah. So I find that I a lot of stuff I do, it just depends on whatever's in front of me. It's like puzzles, really. And I enjoy the puzzle aspect of what I'm doing.
Yeah, puzzles are important. I know a lot of people that are puzzlers, one in particular.
Anyway. I like those eyes that you embroidered on a hat. I thought that was really clever and beautiful.
Oh, I like eyes. Eyes are very, very important. And I like the idea of eyes in the back of your head, because that's kind of what that is.
I like that too.
Because, you know, being a mother and a grandmother, you kind of have developed a skill for, oh yeah, Philippe, what's going on back there? You're sort of sensing what's happening rather than seeing it and being right about it.
Do you make dolls for your grandchildren? Have you?
Have you made dolls?
I noticed you make dolls.
Oh yeah, I've made a lot of them. Hundreds probably. I used to do that big fair. I live in Seattle, obviously, and there's a big art fair in Bellevue every year, the Northwest Arts and Crafts Fair, which is supposedly very prestigious. And I always got into that and never really made any money. And always it was 96 degrees and had to be outside. But it was very, very fun to do. And there, you know, people are going to like my work or they're not. And I don't really care. The dolls are intricate because I'm very detail oriented, and the teeny weeny things are really, really important to me. But now I can't remember what I was going to say. See if this is going to happen.
Well, we were talking about dolls.
Oh yeah, I've as a matter of fact, last week a woman got on my Facebook page and told me that she bought one of my dolls like 25 years ago, and she sent me a picture of it, which is really pretty cool. And when I was in Hawaii, I sold stuff for people all over the world. So my things have gone to many countries, and I hope they make people happy. And I don't take enough photographs of my work. I don't have any photographs really. A lot of recent stuff I do, but yeah, it's kind of careless of me.
I know. I'm pretty careless too, and I find that I mistreat older stuff. I wish I had.
I like how you say stuff and not work. That's good.
Yeah, I did a big piece of combs made out of paper and paper mache, and I painted. I did hundreds of them, and then I put them all in a just big mass. It was a story. It was really about this guy named John Frum, who was a sergeant in the army and in the Pacific, and as the United States was chasing the Japanese, they stopped at all these islands in New Guinea, and the people in New Guinea couldn't believe it, because these planes would land and then all this stuff would come out of it, and then these people would leave it. They became you probably heard of the cargo cults. And they, this guy John Frum, they turned him into a deity, and they came up with all these rituals. They thought, well, if we do these rituals, then maybe he'll come back with all that stuff again. And one of the rituals was they took coins and they would put it in a big bowl, and they would dish it around like people panning for gold or whatever, with the hopes that we were going to return with all the goodies, and they were called cargo cults. So I did this. I thought, you know, we're like that in America. We have these, we're just one big cargo cult. So I did all these cones that were just part of that.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
That hard to visualize.
Well, on the radio in particular, I'll bet.
Yeah, really. It's hard to visualize things on the radio.
I don't do that anymore, because that's really about this compulsive repetition. And there are a lot of artists that are into that, and I'm just not one of those people.
Compulsive repetition?
Yeah, the people that just come up with pieces that are just the same piece over and over and over again. I can't
do that without
accumulation.
No, I can't do the same thing twice. I'm physically, it's physically impossible for me to copy stuff. Yeah, you know, my work, especially if I can make something that's sort of like it, but it'll be better.
I'm that way too. I find that if I've done something that I consider really successful and then I try and do it again, I have a real problem. It doesn't come out as well if I try and do something again. I just, for me, it's,
there's a lesson there for
move
you.
On.
Hmm? Yep, move on.
Yeah, so
move
everybody's
on.
Got their own way of approaching it. And I'm always fascinated about how different people approach this kind of stuff. And
well, another sort of interesting way to look at all of this is that what's the difference between art and craft? You know,
it's a big subject.
Yeah, that what you're talking about. The way I feel about art is that you know which end of the paintbrush to use, and you do what you do, and then somehow it shifts into a gear and starts to revolve and starts to move. It starts to be something really tangible, and that's very exciting. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. You're talking about the flexibility when you're making art, whereas craft. No, you know, I'm one of those people that sees I just think it's very narrow to try and differentiate too strongly between the two. I know some people.
Well, they should be together. I mean, but there's one that technically you're doing something just beautifully. But you don't add anything of yourself.
I guess you're right. The self part is really an important part.
That's how you develop your own style. I mean, my work is absolutely, you know that I've done it.
Uh-huh. That you know, it's a K Chandler.
It's the way it is. It's a Chandler.
Uh-huh.
It's an MK, actually. I'm more MK than Chandler.
More MK, yeah. Well, I'm not at that point, but it'd be interesting for me to get to the point where people recognize what I'm doing and link it up to me specifically, I suppose. But I move in so many different directions. I don't know. For me, it's like I've made a commitment myself that I'm not going to I'm not going to try and stay in a groove for the purposes of staying in a groove. I'm just going to follow my heart and head. And if there's something in there that I feel like doing, I'm just going to do it, whether or not it is, there's continuity to it. I'm willing to.
You need to have permission. It's a permission sort of situation.
It is permission.
You have to give yourself permission.
Yeah. That's an important word,
one of the least attractive aspects of my personality is waiting for permission. I don't do that anymore, but I used to. Permission to change relationships, permission from somebody somewhere. Tell me what to do because I don't know. No, but I don't do that anymore.
I think that's a really important word in art too. And I find that when I look at certain artists, I find that they give me permission because just certain artists that have done. Louise Bourgeoisie, who does, she's done so many different things. She's gone through so many metamorphoses and I just love her work. And she's
a great big bugs.
She did those big spiders out of steel. Yeah. I mean, massive. And yet she's made these wild, crazy costumes that she dresses in, and she's done quilts and all sorts of stuff. And she's, you know, this woman was a big time artist, and she wasn't afraid to go, to do anything, and that's why I admire her. Really, was that she's really pretty fearless. She didn't say, "Oh well, people aren't going to approve of this because it's so different from what I did before." She just moved around, and I felt like she gave me permission. I figured,
yeah. Well, when I get to a place like that, I always think that, you know, that if they don't like it, they're silly, or you know, that they're wrong because it's wonderful. And I think that, you know, I sort of disregard people who are scornful.
Well, you've earned it.
I have.
You've earned it.
Paid my dues.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I never even think about the word scorn. but permission does mean something to me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, score is kind of like you look at something and it. I do a lot of women and a lot of nudes and a lot of sort of sensual situation stuff, and that tends to really scare people. You know, I think that human beings are beautiful, and they, you know, I really don't have time for that kind of short-sightedness.
We don't have much time, but I just want to bring up one other word, and that is ugly. And do you ever look at your work and say, "Oh, that's horrible," and throw it away?
I throw away things constantly, but I don't think they're ugly. I think they just don't work.
Don't work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to paint faces, which I don't really show to people, but I did one that just scared me.
And faces?
A face. Yeah. I like to paint faces. And I did one.
Obviously I like to do faces.
Yeah, you do obviously, but I don't show mine, but it was scary. I was actually frightened by what I did, and I painted it over. And now I'm really sorry that I did, but it scared me at the time. I was like, "Oh my gosh, where did that come from?" And
maybe you can find a pentimento aspect of it and see through the paint, or
I don't know. I don't even know what happened to it. It's gone. But
Well, it's great being an artist. I'm happy to be one. I'm also a person who is an artist, and an artist who is a person. And you know, we brighten our corner as we can and try to maintain our sense of humor and hope that we can continue to be artists, because it's a lot of fun.
I'm with you. Fun. Channeling your inner child.
It's fun.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with fun.
No. It's almost the top of the hour. I don't know if if Jeff's waiting for us to wrap this up, but
Snatch it out of our hands.
It seems like a good time
Well, thanks, Stephen. It was fun.
Thank you. I'm really happy that you he hasn't butt in, so we still can talk a little bit, but I'm really happy that you joined me. It was we talked about it a while ago, but here we finally are doing it. And
I have to go have all these tests on my body to find out how much I'm falling apart. So that's what happens when you get old.
I don't think your art reflects someone that's old. I think your art is really youthful.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at it. It looks pretty youthful.
I think so.
Quite a lot of skill involved too, which takes time.
Well, you know, the embroidery, I think the embroidery, one of the things I like about certain things that I do, and I think I see that in embroidery, is that it looks like you're doing it for the first time in a lot of ways. I like that aspect.
Great. There's a nice cleanness about that.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I guess we're on. I can take over, but
either way, I'm just letting you guys.
Are you asleep there?
Hello?
Not. I'm fascinated by this wonderful conversation. It's great to hear you guys talk about the creative process. It gets me wanting to get into the studio myself. And I guess it's. I'll bring up a little music, and we'll head on to the next program here on KWMR.
Thank you, MK.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Well, I married me a wife, gave me trouble all.